Okay, I think we'll get started. Thank you all for being here, and welcome to the second season of Perspectives in Assistive Technology. I'll be your master of ceremonies. I'm Dave Jaffe. My background is as a research engineer at the VA Medical Center, where I worked for many years at the Rehabilitation Research and Development Center, working on all sorts of interesting projects. Some of them you'll see a little bit later on in the presentation. And here's a couple more people who are involved in the class. Professor Nelson, who's in the back, is the professor of record. So if there's anything that administratively that you need, I probably defer to him. And Alex Tung is also involved in the class, but he is working on a medical condition, so he probably won't be around too much this year. And first thing I want to have is Professor Nelson say a few words of welcome, since it's your course. I mean, okay, well, I hate to get praise before the fact, but I think this will work out really well. Today we're going to be talking a little bit about the course and then get into an introduction on assistive technology. And finally, we'll talk about some project opportunities at the end. First thing I want to pass out, some handouts. The first thing is this half sheet of paper is for students who have signed up in the class or who are undecided about signing up. It just gives me your name and address and email address and other things like that. So please give me that at the end. And there are other things I'll pass out later. But I want to first ask if there's anybody that it's going to be a problem for them to get here, you know, at 4:15. Is there anybody who has to leave early? Is there anybody who, in case the discussion goes over a few minutes, would have a problem with that? Okay, great, because we have about 10 or 15 minutes less than I thought I would have. I'm going to pass around a sign-up sheet for people who are not students or are part of the community. The community is welcome here and also play a part in the discussions. And so so not everybody in here are students. And so this is a sign-up list so that I can make sure that everybody gets announcements about what's happening. In subsequent sessions, there'll be a weekly sign-up sheet that you need to sign up on because you need to be here. You only get one unexcused absence. So that's a way of telling us that you're here. This class came about a couple years ago, and there's been an ongoing ME-113 class, which is a senior design projects. And in that class, there was a number of projects looking at assistive technology. And what we found is that the students had a hard time getting up to speed with their projects because they didn't have the background and didn't have the connections. So this course is an effort to give people a little bit of a head start in that process of doing projects. So the goal of the course is to talk about assistive technology from not just my point of view, but other professionals in the field. And I hope you get a good sense of perspective of all the different aspects of rehabilitation and assistive technology. And if you're going to be doing a project, this will prepare you for doing that project and for carrying it on subsequently in the spring quarter. And this course is a little bit different than other engineering courses in that you're going to be dealing with with real people if you're going to be participating in a project. So these are people with disabilities that you'll be working firsthand with. They'll be a part of the project team if you're doing a project. And as I mentioned, there are people from the community here. This is open to everybody. And so it provides information for them. I have to say, though, that, you know, since we only have 10 one-hour sessions, I'm not going to be able to go into depth in any one subject. So this is very much an overview of assistive technology. If there's anything specific that you want me to investigate, I'll be happy to do that. So what we're going to be doing is having weekly lectures on various topics in assistive technology to get you an understanding of assistive technology and some of the ancillary topic areas. We're going to be getting into a lot of things, and I'll touch on that a little bit later. It's such a large field that there's lots of different people working on it, and each person looks at it from a little bit different point of view. And you'll have knowledge so that you'll have an understanding so that you'll be able to do a good job on these student projects should you decide to do that. So that's the design component. From your point of view as a student, you're going to, you know, learn about assistive technologies from more of an engineering and other points of views, and design strategies in working with assistive technology and people with disabilities. And for people who are working on a project, you're going to be working in teams with disabled users and really working with them to come up with some neat solutions. And so this is an opportunity for you to use your design skills that you paid for by going to Stanford and use them, you know, not just to solve problems on a piece of paper, but to solve, you know, people problems. And that's important. So there's many options with this course. If you just want to listen to the lectures, that's one credit. If you want to engage in a project, there are several options. You can participate in a project this quarter and carry that project on to either ME 113 if you're an undergrad, or independent study if you're a graduate student. There's also a possibility of, you know, participating in a project just this quarter and not doing anything next quarter. So it's pretty flexible. And there's also a possibility of not taking this course and working on an assistive technology project next quarter in ME 113 or as independent study. So this is what we're going to be doing for those working on a project. We're going to look at the a bunch of suggested projects, form a team. You're going to be investigating the need for the project, evaluate ideas, gather background information, really understand in depth what the problem is, and come up with design concepts, and then narrow it down to one concept, which you'll visualize in a presentation, either as an image, or you'll prototype something in a very crude way. The idea is not for you to build a functional prototype this quarter. That's for next quarter. So for people who are going to be going on to ME 113, this will put you way ahead of your classmates because you'll have the project all set up and ready to go. And at the end, there'll be a presentation where you'll present your design ideas to the class. So specifically, for those working on a project, there's two reports, the problem identification report, a short midterm meeting, the design proposal that you present, and it's a report, and you'll also reflect on the class experience. If you go on to 113, you basically build a prototype, and these are some of the steps that you'll be working on. And, you know, sort of similar activities if you're doing it as independent study. And as far as the lectures for this quarter, these are the titles. And as you see, we're talking about not only engineering type of things, but assistive technology from the point of view of people with disabilities. Also for looking at patents and intellectual property and human consent forms, which is important when you're doing research involving people. So there'll be engineers, there'll be therapists, there'll be people living with disabilities all presenting their various points of view. Should be pretty interesting. Anybody have any questions so far? Good, I was perfectly clear. Okay, now I'll get into a little bit about what assistive technology is. And, you know, my perspective is one as an engineer, so a lot of this is very engineer-oriented, which I hope you can understand. We'll go through a few definitions, a broad overview, talk about numbers, goals, and other. We'll get into some examples of products and devices, also talk about social correctness. Well, anytime when you're in a new field, there's a certain set of buzzwords which you have to identify. And the same with assistive technology. So these are some of them. The first one is disability. If you're working with a person with a disability, what does that mean? How is that defined? Well, it turns out there's a number of different definitions depending on who needs that definition. For people who provide compensation because of disability, the definition is work-based. So a person with a disability is a health problem or condition which prevents them from working. So that seems logical if you're compensating for work lost. But if you're looking at people from the different activities they can do, then disabilities defined in terms of a limitation to a person's ability to perform a certain activity, and this could be broad, going beyond work to talking about the things that we do every day, activities of daily living, housework, being mobile, things like that. But I saw a limitation there as well, so I came up with this definition. This is opportunity, because you know, it seems that, you know, everybody has a certain amount of opportunity. And if you have a disability, that sometimes that disability can limit the ability for you to take advantage of an opportunity, whether that opportunity is going to school or writing the great American novel or whatever. So this is a more inclusive definition and includes, you know, not only activities, but, you know, vacation, recreation, you know, being with people and friends and the other things that we take for granted doing every day. And as far as the disability statistics in the U.S., you can see from this map that there's people with disabilities in every state of the union, in every city, so they're all over. And by some estimates, they estimate 43 million people, but that goes high as 78 million. So that's almost one out of five people are considered disabled. Yes? It's unclear. I mean, there's a lot of work coming, you know, looking at these numbers, but you really have to look what their conditions are. But the important thing to note is there's lots of people with disabilities. A lot of people have severe disabilities, children, and if you consider disability as a minority group, it's the biggest one. There's a lot of people who are 65 and older, and being old isn't necessarily a disability in itself, but older people have a higher prevalence of disability. People with vision impairments, people with hearing impairments, wheelchair users, 6 million people are mentally retarded, and people who are born with a disability. So that's what we're dealing with. Disability rates vary by age, sex, race, ethnicity. It seems logical that a disability can result in a reduced chance for full employment. And if you don't have full employment, you know, you may not be making as much money as you would, because maybe you didn't have access to education that you needed to get the job to make the money. So it goes on. And as the nation gets older, the number of people with disabilities will probably increase. There are all sorts of people with disabilities. There's people in real life that have disabilities. There's people in Second Life that have disabilities. There's cartoon characters with disabilities. So they're all over. People born with it, people acquired it from injury or disease. Some of the disabilities are things you can't see. You look at a person, they look perfectly normal, but they could have a disability. You never know. Okay, let's look at this group of people who are so impaired that they spend 12 to 25 years in institutions before they can contribute significantly to society. Students, I made you all disabled. How does that feel? If you're a person with a disability, what are your desires? What do you want out of life? Well, if you have a disability that is includes a loss of a function, you want to get that function back, either by exercise, retraining, medication, or perhaps a piece of assistive technology. And you want to perform that function by yourself. You don't want to have anybody else do it for you. You want to be independent in doing that. You want to be able to do that so you can improve your quality of life. And you want to, like as I mentioned before, take advantage of all the opportunities. Perhaps if you don't have that particular function, that you wouldn't be able to enjoy these things. And I added this in here because that's very American, pursuit of happiness. And I think, that's the goal of everybody. And if disability gets between you and that, then that's a problem. In the U.S., over the years, people with disabilities have been mainstreamed, both in the schools and in work. So, and with ADA, you see a lot more people on the streets with disabilities. And we don't have any more mental hospitals. Those individuals are all in the community. In other countries, I'm thinking of Japan now, they have disabled people too, but a lot of times they're at home all the time. They never get out. There's a certain amount of shame, family shame associated with a child with a disability. So they're not outside. They don't necessarily go to school. Or if they do go to a school, it's a separate school from other kids. So that's a problem. But I think that's changing. And also in Japan, Japan is a very high-tech society, and they're looking at high-tech solutions. And there's probably no less than a dozen or more major projects on using robotics to help older people or people with disabilities in Japan. It's very, very big there. That doesn't mean it's going to be successful, but they look at that. Social and political correctness. In referring to a person with a disability, you talk about the individual first and then the disability. So it's a person with a disability rather than a disabled person. It's a sort of a level of political correctness. Now there's variations of that around, and I'll talk about that a little bit more. Focus on capabilities. So you don't say a person can't walk. You say that a person is a wheelchair user, because it's a more positive thing to do. And this is one thing I still see in text, that people refer to groups by name, the disabled, the blind, the hearing impaired, and so on. And it is sort of acceptable, because I've seen, agencies that deal with people with hearing impaired to call themselves the deaf or the hearing impaired. So it's not as bad as some of the other terms. In talking about people, that sometimes they use a para or quad, refer to paraplegia or quadriplegia. And then there's what we think are derogatory terms. But interestingly, within a group of people with disabilities, they'll talk to themselves and refer to themselves as GIMPs and CRIPs and stuff like that. And, it's okay for people to do that, within their own group. But if you talk about, another group and you're not in that group, then that's probably not politically correct to do that. That's sort of interesting. The use of terms is something that really needs to be looked at. And these are terms that are almost used interchangeably. But, you know, my definition is a patient is somebody in the hospital or undergoing treatment, you know, for a medical condition. A user is somebody who is using a device or a piece of assistive technology. A subject is a person who is engaged in a research study. And the consumer is somebody with money that is going to buy something. And one thing that really gets me and my colleagues is referencing disability is, you know, a person is suffering from disability. A person is afflicted with, you know, this disability, confined to a wheelchair, a victim of whatever. And those are really put a very negative spin on the person. Because by and large, if a person is stable, you know, they're not in pain, they're not suffering. But this is just my point of view. Maybe these kinds of terms would be better. A person is diagnosed with a certain condition, is living with a stroke, or a survivor of, you know, some injury. So those are more positive ways of referring to people. Okay, let's have an example. There's me and my colleague Robert Van Etten. How should I refer to him? Anybody care to guess? Bob. He's a person. And he's a rehab engineer, and he's a very bright individual. So the first thing you should do is look at him as a person, and that's how you should think of him. Okay, a lot of people say, Dave, what is assistive technology? Well, I'm going to tell you. It's actually two things. It's both a device that helps a person with disability and the process that makes these devices available to people. So a device is one that has some kind of benefit for a person with a disability. And the process is one which engineers and other people use to specify and bring these devices to life, including not only the design development aspects of it, but also bringing it to market and, you know, advertising it and assessing its value. So there's lots of people, healthcare professionals and others, that work in the field of assistive technology. And they have various positions, research, development, design, prescribe, fitting, supplying them, and assessing their benefit. And these are the titles that they have: physicians, clinicians, therapists, occupational therapists, physical therapists, people that supply and fit these devices, whether it be a prosthetic or some other kind of device, people who make policy about providing the devices, insurance companies even, and educators. And I guess I'm in that category, you know, educating you about this right now. So what do assistive technology devices do? They provide greater independence, increased opportunities for participation, improved quality of life for people by having them, enabling them to perform tasks, you know, that replace a function that was lost. And in some cases, it may not be by a prosthetic kind of device, but it may be some type of assistive device that makes it easier to deal with the world around you, whether that world consists of other people or other devices like computers. So that's what I'm referring to there. This is the Hall of Independence. And I think that's my hand. And there's lots of new assistive technology devices coming out, and I'll talk about a few of them. But they range from implants, which can be considered assistive technology, nanotechnology, robotics, all sorts of interfaces, and mobility devices, and computer devices. Rehabilitation. Well, the medical model of rehabilitation is to restore function that is lost through surgery, medication, therapy, or retraining. But a more inclusive model includes assistive technology, and more that's a part of a rehab program. So the goal of rehabilitation is basically to restore function, and the goals of assistive technology are, you know, to not only do that, but increase the quality of life and independence for people. And rehab engineers are people who work in the field who do one or more of these tasks. Maybe Mickey Mouse was a rehab engineer. So there's lots of different facets than just rehab engineering. I belong to a professional organization called RESNA, and they have these special interest groups, and these are the titles of them. So they're interested in lots of things, you know, from wheelchairs, electrical stimulation, computers, devices for farmers, robotics, things to help people get a job and work, and universal access, and also appropriate technology for other countries. Lots of different things. This is the most important slide. The message is there's lots of people with a disability, not only in the U.S. but worldwide. But every person with a disability is a unique individual, and that as being unique, everybody has their own desires and wishes. So that makes it hard to come up with one device that will satisfy everybody. The largest group of people with disability are wheelchair users, a million of them. But since everybody is different, there is no well-defined market. You know, not every person with a disability needs one thing. I mean, it's not like pants. You know, everybody has a little bit different kind of desire. So that means if you don't have a mass market for something, that means that the companies that are producing these devices do make very small runs. And because these runs are small, they don't make a lot of them, they're going to be very expensive. And the companies themselves are going to be small because the profit margin is not there. So that's the reality of the situation. So let's talk about some assistive technology devices. And these are some of the things I worked at the VA. This is something I worked on 25 years ago. This is a wheelchair that's been enhanced by a pair of these ultrasonic sensors. And what they do is they range the distance to the person's head. And so the head acts like a wireless joystick. And this little box here creates signals that look like they came from a joystick. So let us look at this convenient video. See it in work. This is from a time when the world was much more pixelated than it is now. So you can see all I have to do is tilt my head forward, backward, left, or right to aim it, and my hands never leave my lap. So this would be useful for people who don't have use of their hands and yet want to move around. And a lot of times when I'm driving this, people can't figure out how I'm driving it. Is that cool or what? This is a robotic hand, and it's not a manipulation device, but it's a communication device. People who are deaf and blind use a tactile version of fingerspelling, which is a subset of sign language. So for each letter of the alphabet, there's a hand gesture that represents that letter. We all know, like V for victory and stuff like that. So people who are deaf and blind would feel the hand of a able-bodied interpreter as that interpreter spells out the letters of a message into the hand of a person who is deaf and blind. So this is a robot hand that does that conversion without a person. So there's a cable going off to a little a keyboard, and the keys that are pressed are converted, translated into fingerspelling, and the person who is deafblind feels that and can understand what's being said. Is that cool too? Okay, good. Another project I worked on used a little bit of virtual reality. In this project, a person with a walking disability is on a motorized treadmill wearing a head-mounted display, and in the display they see an image of their feet from the side taken by this camera. And there's a computer that adds this box in there, and the subject is given the task of stepping over the box on each step. And there's a reflective tape on the bottom of the foot, and what you want to do is not hit the box, not intersect it, either with their toe at the beginning or their heel at the end. So they have to step over it, and in order to avoid the obstacle. So this is a person doing it, not always successfully. Takes a lot of concentration, so maybe that's an element in making it successful. Another project I worked on is a driving simulator, and we use this with people with brain injury and stroke to assess their driving ability after their accident. Because if you ask these people, you know, how well can you drive after you had a brain injury, they'll say, oh, no problem, I'll be fine. But how do you test somebody like that? Well, at the VA, what they were doing is putting people in a car and seeing how well they did. Well, you know, that has safety issues. So we developed a system that we're able to assess and train people with brain injury so that we can see if they can drive better, or at least assess if they can't drive. So that was pretty neat. I don't have a video of that. here's some other research going on. And this is sort of hard to see, but this guy is wearing EEG electrodes, and there's a display here, and various parts of the display are flashing at different rates. And if you focus on a particular part of that, your EEG picks up that flash rate, and basically you can determine where a person is looking by looking at that signal. And so it's a way of figuring out where your attention is focused, and you can use that as a communication device. So you don't even have to monitor the eyes. All you got to do is monitor the brain waves. And this is actually the second round of research in this. Somebody had done this before many years ago. Here's a project at Stanford. This is a robotic hand, a three-fingered robotic hand, and a base, and it uses a Segway base. And it uses a very nice robotic hand. And the description says it uses laser scanners, but these are ultrasonic rangefinders all around the base. So it responds to voice, and it's not necessarily made to be a manipulation aid for a person with a disability. It's more made for industrial use. But like a lot of these projects, they could have application in this area. There's been a lot of recent work on prosthetic devices. And here's one of them. Here's a foot device that incorporates sensors and microprocessors. So it helps a person walk. Pretty interesting. There's a lot of people coming back from the war that need devices like this. Here's some ongoing research at Rice University using another robot, an external robot. You put your hand in here, and there's a whole regimen of training to look at wrist rehabilitation and arm rehabilitation using a robot system. And this was started at Stanford, at the VA, actually. And again, some more hand devices. And this looks like it's going to be available as a prosthetic hand. And this has signals in it that look at the surface signals of the forearm to manipulate the fingers. Well, we'll see how well that works. Oops. For small kids, here's a little mobility device, and in front of it they put this sensor, array of ultrasonic sensors, so that the kid can't run into obstacles. So it enables them to explore the world on their own. Again, you know, independence is a key word. At NASA, Ames, well, in Moffett Field, there's a company that's working on this power knee, and it's a device that provides extension, force, and resistance to help, you know, older people, you know, get up out of their chair and help them walking. And a pretty interesting device nearing, it'll be introduced in the market pretty soon, looks like. This is an iBot wheelchair that was developed by Johnson & Johnson and Dean Kamen, and it sort of preceded the Segway, but it has the same kind of balancing capabilities. So in this mode, you can be talking eye-to-eye with your peers. And it also has a four-wheel drive ability and the ability to climb stairs, you know, backwards. They're a very interesting device. And at $25,000, they're losing each money on each one they sell. Well, there's, you know, robots that that you wear, and this is one that is like almost a full-body robot. The idea here is that you're strapped into this robot, and it walks in with some ideal gait. And if you do that enough, the idea is that, you know, your walking will get better. So there's one of these at the VA, and they're looking at improving gait with this for people who have had a stroke. And no lecture of mine would be complete without top 10 list. So, but these top 10 things are things that a colleague of mine, Dennis Anson, submitted. And some of these things are mechanical. Some of them are electronic. This is a board for an Apple II. This allowed a user to operate the computer with either a single switch by row column scanning, looking at letters, or an external keyboard or Morse code. So this provided a way for a person with a disability who couldn't type to operate a computer. And late 70s. One of the big advances in mobility was ultralight wheelchairs. So just, you know, redesigning a wheelchair for lightness made a huge difference on not only the way it performed, but the way it looked. And a person who uses a wheelchair, you know, they're wearing their wheelchair. It's their clothes every day, so you want it to look good and perform well, right? And another part of a wheelchair is, you know, using, you know, good bearings. If you have good bearings, you know, the wheelchair works a lot better. You know, they've run marathon races. You know, wheelchair users have run marathon races. And many years ago, you know, the wheelchair racers came in after the runners. And these days, all the wheelchair racers do have much better times than the runners. So are wheelchair users at an advantage or disadvantage? So there's been big advances in wheelchair. And this is a large keyboard that was used with a computer. And in this case, the computer had a speech synthesizer connected to it. So the idea here is that a non-vocal individual can press the letters and it can vocalize for that person so it can speak for that individual. And at the time, it was like it was good. It was like a big step forward. And this was actually done in the Bay Area. And beyond letters, people have put, you know, whole words behind each of the squares. So you press a square and it would say, you know, good morning, or I need to go to the bathroom, or something like that. Speech recognition software has come a long way, and originally was for people with disabilities, for people who couldn't type on the keyboard but wanted to interact with the keyboard. And originally the first one cost $6,000, and I remember using it, and it took a while to train it and for it to train you to recognize, you know, it sufficiently. But over the years, the price has gone down to, you know, under $150. And I think in the new versions of Windows, it's included in there so you can interact with your computer by voice. So if you don't have the ability to use a keyboard, this is how you would interact with the keyboard and the wider internet and do things like that. There's been a bunch of these eye gaze computers, and here's one version of it that he has a camera here that's looking at your eyes and can tell what part of the screen you're looking at. And on the screen here, you might be able to see a keyboard layout, so you can basically type by pointing your eyes. And so if you can't move your head and use other devices that look at head motion, then this is the solution for you. but again, very expensive. A big idea was using Morse code as an input method for working with, interacting with computers. And there was a guy in Menlo Park who had a brainstem spinal cord injury that I knew, and he was able to only move his thumb, you know, like maybe a quarter of an inch. But with that movement, he was able to do Morse code, to talk to his computer, to, you know, to send emails and really communicate with the rest of the world. So having just a quarter inch of movement is sufficient for you to interact. And Stephen Hawking uses, you know, a sort of different system not based on Morse code to communicate. Dynamic displays. These are displays that have pictures on here that change as you press the keys, so you can actually develop sentences that you can speak or send later on, so you can communicate with people face-to-face or over the Internet again. So these are custom devices that can be put on a wheelchair. And this is sort of a negative top 10. The introduction of graphic computer interfaces really caused a lot of problems for people with disabilities because they needed to look at using a mouse and seeing various parts of the screen and focusing their attention on parts of the screens that weren't obvious. So now there's special software that makes it easier for people who are blind to know what's on the screen and how to interact with it. But it's a continuing problem. Okay, let's talk about some projects from the past. And a couple years ago, one group of students in ME113 did this standing aid for a young male wheelchair user to help him, go to the bathroom without assistance. Another device was a big lift that was operated manually to allow a person in a wheelchair and a therapist to transfer to and from a bed. This page-turner program was a big hit a couple years ago. It made the front page of the Palo Alto Daily News and is still being used. In fact, I want some more of these devices. The students did a really good job using a small microprocessor and a very nice mechanical mechanism. Even in the prototype that was pretty crude, it worked very well. So enabled the users to turn the pages independently so they can read a book on their own. One of the better projects from last year was this one. This is a motorized device that allowed a person to remove the sock that sits between their stump and the prosthetic leg. Normally, it has to be pulled out so that you have good skin contact with the prosthetic. But the sock aids the insertion part, so you have to remove that sock for use. And it was very awkward for a number of people to use it, especially if you're older and weaker. You had to sort of pull it out away from you. So this is a motorized device that did that job, and it actually has a remote control on the cane here. The cane stabilized the person as they put on the leg, and then they would activate it, and it would pull the sock out of the prosthetic. It was very nice. They did a good job. Unfortunately, the students aren't here to talk about it. But I want to hand out some suggested projects for this year, student projects. And these, again, would be for people who are considering, even though you're not signed up for it, I want you to consider, you know, working on a project, because some of them are pretty interesting. So there's a whole list of very interesting project ideas that range from looking at specific materials to make a cane with, to some electronic ones, to some that are mechanical. These are ones that have been submitted by people with disabilities or people who manage people with disabilities at senior centers or assisted living centers around the area. So in many cases, these projects aren't completely defined, and that's part of the student's job would be to talk to these people and really identify and understand, you know, what they need, and then work on them this year. If those don't appeal to you, there's a whole mess of projects in at that NSF, and that seniors have worked on in project courses that are written up in the NSF guidebook. And if you have a project in mind, if you're very passionate about it, you know, we can make that happen as well. So, new this year is we have some resource people that can help you if you're working on a project. My colleagues, Debbie Kenny, who will be speaking to us, and Doug Schwant, Doug is a mechanical engineer, and Debbie is an occupational therapist, and also Kyle Smith, who's a physical therapist, will help you, work with people with disability and can help you with some project ideas. All the stuff is on the class website, and here's some telephone numbers and email addresses of the teaching staff. And on the project sheet, there's also contact information for those coaches. And to give you an idea of what's involved in projects, there's the first assignment is listed here. And it's basically to get together, form a team, give the team a name, select a project manager, and really start looking at contacting the people associated with the project suggestion, and really come up with a deep understanding of the need, and then work on figuring out what else was available and why it doesn't work, and coming up doing the things that students do best, brainstorming, coming up with design concepts, and picking one of those, and maybe prototyping a piece of it for a presentation at the end of the quarter. Any questions on any of this stuff? How am I doing on time? Perfect. They will be. They will be tomorrow. The PDF file will be there tomorrow. And I'm audio recording this, so that will be on there as well in case you have colleagues who missed it. Drew, do you have a comment? Right. Right. Well, we can do that informally right now if people have time and want to work on a project. They can get together, now. I'll have your names from the list, and I can post those. And that has information on what year you're in. It certainly works better if you have teams composed of just undergraduates or graduates, and certainly it would work better with teams that want to take their project to prototype next quarter. But again, we're flexible. But the ideal situation is, teams stay together this quarter and next quarter, either in ME 113 or some independent study. Questions, comments? Right. Yeah. Right. I'll be certainly available by email, and I can certainly answer any questions about any of these particular projects, or you can call me if you want to interact in that way. But I'll be as helpful as I can. Can I see a show of hands of people that are considering working on a project? Oh, good. I must say that we have money to help you out in the project, both this quarter in coming up with whatever funds you need to produce a prototype or a foam core model, And we'll have money, you know, for you to pursue that next quarter as well. So, question? For this quarter, I would say no more than a couple hundred dollars ought to be sufficient. You know, I don't want you to do a full prototype, but if there's a piece of it that's crucial to the design, you know, you're welcome to mock that up either on the computer, in foam core, or make a little model just to show us and yourself that it will work. So, yeah, if there... Right. Yeah, you know. Right.
Idea of working on yet another project in your curriculum.
No, this is more need finding and coming up with a design concept. For one unit extra of credit, you know, that we don't ask a whole lot. Right. We expect you to do a good job, but you know, we don't expect you to be working, staying up nights to do this. Excuse me? Oh, yeah, I forgot. And one of the projects is really interesting. There's people here has a friend up in the city. He's 95 years old. He started Car and Driver magazine, and he has difficulty getting around, and he's got a lot of money, and he wants a solution that will help him, you know, get from his car, you know, up, on the sidewalk, up and down the hills, and into the places that he goes. So that's really sort of an interesting one. If there's an opportunity to work on a next step in some of these projects that were done last year or the year before, the Page Turner project is one that is sort of crying out for another iteration of design and development. And there's people that are just waiting for those things, because basically there's the ones that are on the market sell for a lot of money, and there's a niche for something that costs, you know, under $1,000. Excuse me? And they don't work. Yes. Terry also has a project to help her deal with her cat.
Well, yeah, it's not. I think there's a broad need for this. It's a cat. So you have litter boxes. A litter box is all the way on the floor. And if you put it on something higher, they're going to dump the whole box on the floor. And my theory is that not only people with disabilities like me, but the aging boomers.
Yeah. Okay. There are some of these projects are for students here at Stanford, and others are for people in the community. And I've made contact with the directors of assisted living centers, a couple of them around here. So there's an opportunity for you to go and interview people and figure out, you know, what they need and what would benefit them. So lots of possibilities and opportunities for you to expand beyond books. Any additional questions? I want to refer people to the website, because all the material that has been handed out is also on the website, and all the speakers' PowerPoints will be on there as well, as they were last year. And next week is going to be a very good speaker. Molly Story's coming down from Santa Rosa, and she's going to be talking about universal design and designing for accessibility. And it was one of the more popular lectures last year. So she's returning next week. So if you have friends or colleagues, they're welcome to come by, even though they're not enrolled. So please spread the word. This would be a good talk. Okay, please hand in the sheets and the sign-up sheet and everything. And I'll see you next week. Anybody who has any questions, I'm here right now. Thanks so much. Thanks a lot. Turn off.